every version of what can be done with food, and a few things I won't mention, but I am anorexic, bulimic, and compulsive eater. But for the purposes of this meeting, I will share mostly as a compulsive overeater. But I can tell you that any part of this disease, any action using food to avoid my feelings, my life, myself, will lead me down the road back into my primary form of this disease. So what I'm saying is that if I undereat, I am setting myself up to overeat. If I overeat, I will puke. So all roads lead to Rome. So I do not, undereating is never an option. And I always thought as a compulsive overeater that anorexia was a cure for compulsive overeating. All right, that makes sense to me. I mean, and boy, did I find that out, how the torture of it. And any version of this disease leaves me in a place that is unacceptable and unnecessary. And I guess that's one of the reasons I'm here. I am as my you need to know me a little bit. I think it helps to know that Zoom doesn't present much, but I'm probably look like I'm probably a normal weight, and I am. I'm thin. I'm tall and thin, 5 foot 7, and I was 240 pounds. I was about 11. I've lost 100 pounds, and I am abstinent. I came into OA when I was 17. I relapsed for about 12 and a half years, and I'm abstinent currently for 30 years. And my abstinence was January, this past January, 30-year anniversary. So it is a privilege to be able to be here and talk to you. There's no place I'd rather be in this moment than here. And you know, my horror was that for some reason I am up every morning. This morning I would sleep in. Other than that, I was totally rocking. Very happy to be here. And I made it. So what I come from tax-paying parents and who really wanted to do different than their parents. And my mother was comes from a long line of addiction, alcoholism, Irish, German. My father was bipolar. And both of my parents were hoarders. And the level of neglect and abuse is something I can't describe. I think I was born 9 pounds, 1 ounce, and I just got bigger. I think I intuited the anxiety in the house, the pressure in the house, the fear in the house. My father started to become violent with the birth of my older sister. My mother said he just wasn't before that. My uncle, who was 20, died of a brain tumor when my mother was pregnant with me. So I was born into a house of grief, anxiety, violence. And I say that because I've had to look back at those things to try to have an understanding of where I come from. And in an effort to have a relationship with myself that is one of compassion and understanding and filling in the blanks and understanding the holes, I have to know who I am. And I found that very valuable. I eat because a billion reasons, and I eat because it's Thursday. I do not know at this point. When the cucumber turns into a pickle, it does not turn back. So can I tell you a million reasons? Past life of starving to death. I tried that one. You know, I had past life regressions. You name it, I've done it. None of it matters. It's helpful. But what I'm saying is that that didn't help me solve the problem that I cannot stop eating if left to my own devices. Under conditions without this program, I am either obese, fantasizing how fabulous my life will be when I get skinny, and you cannot tell me otherwise, or I'm skinny, plus or minus puking, and I cannot stop thinking about food. And the mental torture involved in that, and the mental hijack involved with that, and I can't live like that anymore. I cannot live with the white knuckling and the pain and the fear. And when I got abstinent, 12 and a half years of relapse, I was not, you know, everyone said, you know, the program is for anyone who's willing. No, it's not. It's for anyone who does it. You know, that little phrase we have. I didn't, I at this, at when I got abstinent, I had been a relapse on and off with long periods of abstinence for about 12 and a half years. So I knew that it worked. but I would be abstinent and then I would go into relapse. And a couple of things started to happen. One, I noticed certain patterns. I noticed also that every time I wanted to get abstinent again, I would. But they say the first abstinence is a gift and the second one you have to work for. Well, what about the 40th one? And I found that I had to work harder and harder and the progression was worse and worse. So every relapse was much, much worse and much harder to come out of. And the and just for anybody who's struggling to get abstinent, everybody with long-term abstinence had 15 minutes at one point, 15 minutes of abstinence at one point. And they weren't sure if they could do it this time. They weren't sure if they get abstinent this time. What I said to my brain when, because my relapses, I became bulimic. I didn't become bulimic because of the program. I came bulimic for an easier, softer way. Because I choked on a piece of chicken and I'm like, oh my God, that's 60 calories. And then that was it. I thought God was really with me. I can just puke this up. Bulimic binges are very violent. And the caloric intake is shocking. I blew through money like a junkie. That's what my ATM looked like, a junkie. So as I said, you know, any version of this that looks better than any other version, there might not be accuracy in that. I was a very obese kid. I was made fun of. I was, you know, horribly abused. And I was the kind of kid that all I really wanted, I was a nice kid. All I really wanted was to be liked and included. That's all I wanted. And I never was. I was an outcast. I didn't have friends. And I just loved the boys. I thought that being a girl, I couldn't believe God did that for us. How cool was that? We got these cute boys and they did not like me, you know, and it was so hard because I'm good at being rejected. I know how, and I was made fun of a lot. And I just knew that if I got skinny, I would be fabulous. In fact, I knew if I got skinny, I would feel the way the woman on the cover of the magazine looked, fabulous. And boy, was I wrong. When I lost 100 pounds when I was 16, I went to my parents, who really weren't, my mother was really, really neglectful, like horribly neglectful. And one of the reasons she could get, you know, people say, my parents did the best they could. No, my parents did the best they could get away with. They were taxpaying citizens, but there were a lot of emotional needs and wants. And I didn't make a lot of noise because that wasn't my personality. So I didn't get. I remember one time going to my mother and crying because I just wanted to go to, the kids were making fun of me so badly. I wanted to go to the Catholic school, private school. And she said, no, we can't afford it. And when my, you know, and that was it. That conversation was shut down. I'm telling you, the kid, they were sticks. They were poking at me. They were punching me. And it was a joke because I was a fat kid. When my younger sister ran away from home and she came back, she went to a private girls' high school. So the money was there. It just wasn't there because I didn't make the noise. And that message came loud and clear through me. And you know, I've had to process those feelings through my therapy, ACOA, and any place else I can, you know, so that I can be free. To forgive them is my freedom. And this is part, you see, OA is not a rotary for fat people. It's not about being nice and kind and being loving. It has for me become about being genuine and authentic with the framework of the steps and this community of people. I cannot get what I get here anywhere else, or I would have done it by now. I would have purchased it. I would have bought it. There is something that happens when we come together as people with a common problem of compulsive eating, that we come together and there's something like in AA that happens that gives us this gift of food neutrality. If we stay close and stay on this particular path, I have experienced, you know, when I got abstinent, I couldn't fucking stop eating and I was suicidal. And it wasn't like, who cares about abstinence? I was like, who cares? I have major depression. I have co-occurring mental health issues. I didn't know it at the time. And I did not care. I was done. I was done with all of it. I couldn't stop eating and I was done. And there was a point where it occurred to me, I had this little moment where my brain said, go to a meeting. And I'm like, you know, I'm talking about, I got puke on my clothes. I'm eating. I can't stop eating. And something inside of me said, there's a meeting up the block. I was living in the city, in Manhattan at the time. And something inside of me said, there's a meeting up the block. It started 5 minutes ago. Why don't you go? You need to go. So I went. Puke on my coat, in my hair, confession of sugar. I went. I sat in the back and I listened. And then I went to another meeting, eating the whole thing. And I remembered I had heard at the meeting, bring the body and the mind will follow. Act your way into right thinking. You can't think your way into right acting. So I started going to meetings. I'm still eating. And I would get long periods of abstinence with violent relapses. Like I could do it. I couldn't maintain it. So you know what I said is my brain said, when I ultimately got a couple of days, what makes you think you can do it this time? You know you can't do this. And I said, you know what? You and me are going to a meeting. You can have your own chair, brain. You can sit there. I don't care. But and I'm telling on you because I have to tell on you. And I started to become transparent about what someone I had heard called pillow talk. So when
gentle
you fall asleep.
Gentle reminder at 10 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you. So when I put my head on the pillow at night, all the stuff that goes through my head, that's the stuff I had to talk to my sponsor about. Not the, hi, how are you? I'm working my steps. I'm doing my, I'm sponsoring 12 people. I am rocking it. No, it's the shit that's bothering me. It's the problems in my relationships. It's the things that I said at work that I shouldn't have, or the relationship that I'm in, male, female, friend, husband, boyfriend. It's that stuff is the stuff I need to talk about. That's the stuff that's eating me alive. That's the stuff I protect. That's the stuff I don't want to deal with. And that's the stuff I'm terrified to change. I am a toxic people pleaser. I was born feeling that my job in this life is to make you happy. How I feel is unimportant. I'm happy if you're happy. My being genuine, my opinions, my needs are unimportant. If you're happy, I'm safe. I also have horrible abandonment. It is catastrophic. If I do something wrong, I'm rejected. It's like, it feels catastrophic to me if you're unhappy because of something I did. And I don't really know, but I don't think normal people have that quite like that. Not that normal people, whatever, wherever they are, I think I know two on Facebook. I have like 500 friends, maybe two that I think these are like healthy people. Everyone else is in some form of fucked up, but I know where I need to come. I know what I need to do. And it does, none of that matters. It doesn't, you know, compare and despair. I don't get into it. So what I'm saying, this is not the qualification I thought I'd give this morning, but it looks, you know, I'm hoping everyone's following along. And if you are, I'm sorry. You know, what can I say? I had to, you know, if this was about measuring your cottage cheese a little better, who'd be better than us, right? I had to wake up and stay awake. And that was the difference in this abstinence, is I had to wake up in my life. And I had to put myself in the center of this program because there's something, as I said, I went to a therapist one time and she said, Carol, you need to go to meetings because these people can give you something I can't give you, but you need to come here because I can give you something they can't. And I never forgot that because she validated my need to be in the program. Because if I go to a therapist and they don't think much of OA, we're not connecting because I found something here that, as I said, there's something in this connection. I cannot work this program alone. And I have tried. My big book, I take it in my bed, reading it. I'm spiritual. I'm cool. I'm, you know, I'm working my program and I promise you I'm eating, you know, I'm eating. So it is something about the connection with others. We have a very imperfect fellowship. It doesn't matter. Most people in OA are not abstinent. I'm sorry if I'm blowing the top off of anyone's, you know, brain right now. It doesn't matter. There are, if it's been done, then I can do it too. And that's what we'd had like two ladies that would fly in and out of meetings in Long Island when I was a kid, you know, 17, I came into the program. I never left. So, and they'd come into meetings and they always looked fat and they were grateful and they were abstinent and everybody else was in relapse. But if they did it, it can be done. If they did it, it can be done. And I had to figure out, relapse to me wasn't Relapse is God calling. Relapse wasn't, you know, people say I'm a relapse survivor. You know what? I don't know about that. I did it to myself. It is a horrible, horrible, believe me, I was always in some kind of relapse, plus or minus 40 pounds. That said, when I started to pay attention, what's going on? In the morning after a binge or any kind of, you know, horror with food, I would wake up and I would have some idea of what in my life needed to be changed. And it would be quickly blown out by, oh my God, and my fat stomach and my fat, and my horror of having to get through this day feeling disgusting, full of food. I don't know what to do, not eating breakfast. I just want to be dead and I have to live. Oh my God. I was never afraid of fucking dying when I binge. I was afraid of waking up the next morning because the living through that, trying to get day one again. Oh my God. So a few things I discovered. There is no food plan that's going to take the pain away. Okay. So I find something.
Until sticks. Reminder at 5 minutes.
Thank you. I had to let go of the hope for a better past. And I had to figure out how to do this. Not the way you, that way. I had to take the books and start reading and figure out what are these people, these white guys in the 1930s, in middle age, who write in a weird kind of a way that doesn't, like, I'm like, I don't get this. I got to figure it out because there's something here. If it worked for the drunks, can it work for me? And I called all these ladies that would buzz in and out of meetings abstinent. And I would say, what do you do? And they all said the same thing. Get a sponsor, be a sponsor, go to meetings, talk about the hard stuff. You have to make really hard choices in abstinence, really hard choices to stay abstinent. I had to let go. I'm not implying anything, but you know, I got thin and I wanted to get married because that's what I thought normal people did. I wanted to do that. And when I got married to my first husband, well, I don't know why I'm saying this, but Titanic was, I cried for 3 months after watching Titanic. That was years ago. And I was very unhappy, but I was married. So I lived life according to what I thought needed to be done. And I had to leave the marriage to preserve my absence. And because I have to, and I'm trying to talk about this in a way that makes sense. I have to follow my inner guidance. It's not, after a while, you have to work. I had to work the steps and figure out how to listen to my feelings. The feeling thing, holy crap. When I got abstinent, I started to get feelings and I just wanted to be happy. I don't want the feelings. I mean, a lot of OA is distress tolerance. I have hard feelings sometimes. I get very frightened. I have major depression, medication or no medication. Sometimes I have hard feelings. Sometimes I get anxious for no reason whatsoever. My mother, all right, here, how about this one? My mother died about 9 months ago. First thing I did was I went to a meeting. I got the call. I got off the phone. I called my sister. I lied on the bathroom floor because I couldn't move and it was cold. And I got up and I went to a meeting. And then I went to another meeting. And then I went to another meeting. And you guys embraced me and I did not know what to do. And the thing that I didn't know was that I would be okay somehow. I couldn't imagine being on this planet without my mother. And then I didn't really cry the way I thought I would. It was kind of like, as I started to think about some of my childhood, it was like, ding dong, the bitch is dead, you know, ho ho. That's not the reaction I'm supposed to have. I'm a
gentle
nice
reminder at 2 minutes.
Thank you. So what I'm saying is a lot of things have come up for me that weren't kind of what I thought. I couldn't become a program person. I had to become me, a real person who deeply works and loves this program because it has helped me and saved me. I cannot be disingenuous. I have to be authentic. And I'm never going to be the mayor. It doesn't always come out right. I don't always say it right. But I'm telling you, my whole existence is about making sure you're happy and ignoring everything that goes on inside of me. And the hardest relationship I've ever had, well, the second hardest relationship I've ever had was with God, as I don't understand him. And I, 30 years ago, I said, okay, there is a God and I'm not God. And my sponsor said to me, Carol, I want you to get on your knees and I want you to pray to God. And I said, well, I don't believe in God. And she said, okay, then get on your knees and pray to a God you don't believe in. And that made sense to me. And I did that. And 30 years later, I have been exploring this thing that is not what I hear about in meetings, but it has something to do with an alignment of me and you guys. And then the second, well, the hardest relationship I've ever had was with me, because I'm the one that caused my pain, and I became the bully that all those kids were, and I became my violent father, and I hated myself, and I hated myself for a very long time in this program, abstinently. I came to that this was my work, was to learn how to like this person I'm in a body with. I'm 60 years old, and about 57, I started to learn to like myself, not because I wanted to or desired to, because I saw that that was my work. I had to figure out how to get the voices out of my head and to be fair to myself. Like if I was sitting on jury duty, I could be fair to anybody, given the fact.
That's time, gentle reminder.
And I had to be fair to myself, and I had to learn to love myself. And that is daily work. So thank you for being here. If I could tell you how to stick to a food plan, I'd love to. You all know how to do that. But I had to do the deeper work so that I could be free.